You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in and listening. We are The Real Short Box. My name is Donald, and I am here with the ever sturdy Mr. Concrete himself, Kevin. Thank you for joining, Kevin. Thank you for being a part of this, of course, as always. And we have a special guest, Kevin. We have a special guest.
Of course we do. We have the lovely, brilliant, and bewitching.
Why do you sound so depressed about it? Of course we do.
Oh, my God.
We're depressed.
Of course we do. We got
to be more enthusiastic.
Come on.
Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for the bewitching, the beguiling, Miss Bonnie Todd.
Much better, Kevin. Thank you. Thanks for joining, Bonnie. Geez,
thanks for having me.
Today's episode is going to be something of amazement. It's going to titillize your taste buds. It's going to fantasize your fantasies. It's going to give you a lady boner. It is all about... we're talking about disaster films, and are they still relevant, and why? So I think that's a good subject, because we've got, as Bonnie pointed out earlier, we got Twister 2. It's called More Twister, right? Or is it called Twistery?
Twisters.
Oh, Lord, yes, there Twister. We go.
I thought it was called Let's All Do the Twister something.
No, I believe
it's called Twister, Another Cow.
yeah it's another cow. Twister, more cows. Yeah you know, everybody, I feel like everybody in the Midwest had an ice cream joint in their hometown called Twisters,
probably.
Like, I feel like that was just a thing. I could be wrong. So
I,
if you're in the Midwest,
one in Arizona even.
Yeah, see, if you're in the Midwest and you had an ice cream shop and it was called Twisters, no surprise. Really, no surprise. But you can let us know, like in the comments or whatever, or reach out to us. We do have social media. We're big on Instagram. We have a lot of Instagrams. If you go to our live show, it is Rumble Pop on Instagram. And if you go to the podcast you're listening to right now, it is The Real Short Box. You could do that. You could also find Kevin and myself on there, and Bonnie as well. And you could reach out to us, and we probably won't friend you. But you request it. But we'll be like, who the hell is this? But in all seriousness, it'll be a rompingly good time. So let's dive into this. We've had a lot in the past of disaster films. One of the biggest ones I can think of had Leslie Nielsen in it, if I recall. And that is the one where the ship was sinking or overturning. What was that one called? Do you remember?
Poseidon Adventure.
That's the one. Yeah. I believe Leslie Nielsen was in the original one. And then, if I recall, Rutger Hauer was in the made-for-television remake of the Poseidon Adventure. Both fantastic actors, in my humble opinion, and both gone too quickly from this world, also in my humble opinion. One thing I do regret that did not happen in the original Poseidon Adventure was Leslie Nielsen hadn't at that point taken an exact comic turn and had not brought along his fart machine with him. And I feel like if we had had the Poseidon Adventure and they were like, oh, we're sinking, and then, you know, that would have been a whole nother movie and quite fascinating to behold. I would have been very appreciative of a film like that. But that, alas, did not happen. So we have films like Poseidon Adventure. We had good old Charlie in Omega Man, I believe. And we even had, to a point, we had Soylent Green, which is kind of in a way a disaster film, because what happened was truly disastrous to the people. But we got, you know, we got Twister, we got, and some might even say like films like Armageddon, Deep Impact. What was that one? 2020?
2012.
Deep Impact.
The Day After Tomorrow.
Day After Tomorrow, thank you. Yeah. And so on and so on and so on. So many that have gotten kind of crazy.
It's a Geostorm.
And yes.
I didn't see that one.
Gerard Butler. I did see it. It's
was it good?
It's stupid good, but it's stupid.
The trailer looked amazing.
It's fun. It's enjoyable, but it's stupid. Yeah, very stupid. And we just got Civil War, which is kind of like a disaster film because it's pointing out that our political system is a disaster, which is a valid argument to have in these times. So looking at that, like, we're getting a Twister too. So how do we feel about that? Because Bill Paxton was the co-lead and he's gone. Like he passed away a long while ago. And Philip Seymour Hoffman was a part in that and he's gone. Helen Hunt is still alive, sure. But from what Bonnie is telling us earlier, we're not going to get the original cast. We're getting a new kind of a new story that's going to happen with this. It's a reimagining, so to speak.
I believe so. I don't know if it's a reimagining or if it's a continuation.
Maybe it's like the grandchildren or the children of Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt or something like that. They could always do that, which would be somewhat interesting.
Okay, but, so it is an update. It's not. Yeah, so you're right. It's a reimagining.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's dangerous territory right there. Those don't go well. Independence Day, yeah. Independence Day 2, more Independence, more Day, did not go over well at all.
No, that could have been done. Done so much better.
So bad.
I was excited for it originally, and then walking out, I was just like, "Man, there were so many things that just did not make sense with it. That just angered me."
Such as Bonnie, we mentioned this earlier. Give that prime example of someone who was brought back that we thought was dead.
Yeah. So in the original, help me out again. What is the actor's name? I don't know why.
Brent Spiner.
Thank you. I don't know why I cannot retain his name tonight. But yes, Brent Spiner's character. Oh my gosh. He dies in the first one. We see him die. He's choked to death and, you know, murdered by an alien. We see somebody like, you know, pick up his limp, lifeless body, and he's clearly dead, floppy and dead.
Yeah, Dr. Oaken, he's dead.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Oaken. And yet they bring him back in the second movie with the explanation that, oh no, he wasn't dead. He was just in some like crazy alien coma.
Right.
For what, 20 years?
Yeah.
20 years.
Yeah. Sounds good. Sure. Sounds like a real winner.
Makes perfect sense.
So stupid. So goddamn stupid.
Yeah, that was one of the dumbest things about the sequel that just really pissed me off. It didn't make any sense. And what was the purpose? It really didn't do anything bringing his character back.
And like, then these bastards killed off Vivica Fox's Jasmine character.
That they did.
Yeah. They did. Yeah, poor Vivica. Like, okay, so can we address really quickly, really briefly, the fact that older women get sidelined really quickly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and older men do not. They continue to be a draw. And I just find that such bullshit. Like, come on, you know? And like,
honestly, like, we're not even older. Any woman over 30.
but let me ask you this. There's a caveat to this. So Meryl Streep, for example, she is taking a licking and just keeps on ticking, but she also doesn't appear to have had any work done. So do you think that it becomes an issue in Hollywood with women feeling like they're not getting roles because they're not looking young enough and they're getting work done, and then that work is not looking good, and then, you know, producers and casting directors and stuff shy away from those particular actors? Or do you think one negates the other, one creates the other? Like, the fact that they're not getting roles, they assume that it's because of their looks and they get work done. Because I've seen, like, Helen Mirren has obviously gotten some work done in the last probably, 4 or 5 years. And before that,
fantastic, though.
Helen Mirren looked fantastic before that. She got this work done, and I noticed it right away. It's very prevalent. It's very noticeable. It's not terrible, don't get me wrong, but it's very noticeable. And in my eyes, in my thought process, it was why? Why would you need to do that? And did she feel the necessity to do that? Or so, like, briefly, like, do you think that's what's affecting women's roles, is the fact that it's kind of a vicious cycle? Or do you think it's,
I mean,
because
it's a valid point, because there is a lot of pressure on women to maintain a certain standard of beauty mm-hmm. and youthfulness. That goes for celebrities and, you know, us normies.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's a little bit of a catch 22 there. I mean, it's definitely possible, but there's also the fact of there really aren't a whole lot of roles out there for age appropriate women. And they keep casting, you know, young, you know, 20 somethings or early 30 somethings cast as a romantic lead against, you know, a man in his 50s or 60s.
Yeah, I mean, that's been
perfectly acceptable, you know.
Yeah, that's been since the dawn of time.
Cary Grant, kind of creepy, but they keep doing it.
Yeah, Humphrey Bogart, Cary Grant, just two off the top of my head.
Yeah, they keep on.
Or Bacall, yeah.
That's always happening. So it's a little bit of both, possibly, but I think it's mm-hmm. just something that's really ingrained in our culture that for some reason or another, we really don't want to see age-appropriate women with age-appropriate men,
right? Or but and then you get like
that
films like
that, you know.
Yeah, 80 for Brady.
Yeah,
right.
Complicated. That was a great movie with Meryl Streep and Alec Baldwin, age-appropriate together.
Mm-hmm.
Something's Got to Give with Diane Keaton and Jack Nicholson. That's another one that comes to mind where age appropriate. And again, like, but it also addresses the age not appropriate in both movies, because in both movies the man starts off with somebody who's much younger, you know, that could have been their daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And then he mm-hmm. ends up, you know, going back to the older. But
yeah
I don't, a little bit of a catch 22 there.
Yeah, I think the same thing. I think it's a catch 22. It's like a vicious circle. It's like a loop. And it's unfortunate. But getting back to it. So we have this Twister sequel, which isn't a sequel. It's a reboot, technically.
Yeah.
And it's called Twisters. Do you think these films are relevant for our times? Or do you think, in other words, do you think that these films are going to continue to be made? There's a profitability to them, but do you think that people will want to see these types of films? Because at this point, if you look at real life, we've got Canada is burning, the Great North is on fire, and that is something you never thought you would ever, it's just not something you thought about, period. Nobody thought about fires in Canada. Canada is just ice. Everybody always thinks it's just ice. It's just ice up there. And now suddenly, smoke from Canada is wafting down in the United States. And we're talking about, wow, that's terrible. You know, that Canada's on fire, but the smoke is really bad here. So it's an interesting dynamic, because now it's the idea of these films. Some of the ideas are becoming possibilities. Mm-hmm. And now that that's hitting closer to home, are they going to continue to want to do these types of disaster films? Are these things that they're going to want to highlight and point out to people? And do they think that those films are going to be able to make money for them?
I'm going to say yes, because there's a lot of, I mean, not every disaster film is set in a heightened reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of them are for sure, like Day After Tomorrow, clearly. But a lot of them are very much rooted in reality. And some of the most successful films of our time have been disaster films. Titanic, example.
Right.
You know, one of the highest grossing films of all time now. They've been knocked out of number one, right? But they were number one for a really long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And disaster film right there. And the Titanic story is one that had been told a couple of times before.
Even, a night to remember.
Yeah, exactly. And A Night to Remember came out within what, like 10, 15 years of the actual, what year was A Night to Remember?
No, that was like in the 50s. 30s? No, 1950s.
1950s?
Yes.
I swear that there was a 30s version.
Yeah, 1958. I want to see if there is like a 30s version.
Yeah, I want to say there was something that came out relatively soon after.
Mm-hmm. So let's say something did.
Yeah.
It's like, so think about this. We got the, what was it, the Nicolas Cage one? And then we got a couple others. The one, the 9/11 films that came out not more than a couple years after 9/11.
Oh, yeah. World Trade Center and Flat 93.
Yeah,
yeah.
United
93. Yeah, United
93. Excuse me. Yes, United 93. Yes.
Yep. And World Trade Center. World Trade Center was the Nicolas Cage one, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one. I think that's one Oliver Stone did, I believe. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. 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 A lot of people saw those in poor taste. What are your thoughts on those?
I saw
both of them.
It was pretty soon, you know, like 5 years or so after, you know, mm-hmm. the tragedy had occurred, similar to Deepwater Horizon. That came out a few years after that went down. You remember the big oil? The oil rig.
Mark Wahlberg, I believe.
Yeah, that came out like 4 years, 3 or 4 years after that happened. That was pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what's the one? The one with George Clooney when they're out on the boat.
Perfect
Storm. Yeah, Perfect Storm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that one came out really quickly after, but like those are real people with real instances. You know, you look at Twister, which it's not, there's some facts, sure, but there's not particular factual basis on, oh, this happened right here and this is what we're doing.
I wouldn't necessarily say that it's not something rooted in reality, though, just because it was a fictional story. But, you know, tornadoes do happen and tornadoes do rip through, you know, houses and destroy towns. I wouldn't necessarily mm-hmm. say that it was something that was, you know, in a heightened reality. Twister, while fictional, could have happened in theory. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do tornadoes pick up cows, though?
Yeah, absolutely. They could pick up a cow. A tornado could pick up a car, it could pick up a cow for sure.
Yeah.
Very easily.
Like that. Yeah. Just spin the cow around, just like that.
Or anybody listening, your mom. You know?
Wow.
I mean, there have been stories about, you know, people getting stuffed up by the, you know, by a twister and their body ends up. There's been
some people that have been picked up by a twister and laid back down, like just gently placed back down. And it's insane. It's insane how delicate a tornado can be and how violent a tornado can be. If you look at video images of tornadoes, just go to YouTube and type in tornado video. And look at like a level 1 or 2 or whatever and compare that to a 5.
F5.
It's insanity. It's insanity to see an F5. An F5 is just nature's fucking done with you. It is done with you and it wants you off the earth. Like that is a level 5. It will raise everything. It'll annihilate you and everything that you've ever loved and your history. Anything that you ever thought about. No one, it'll go online. And it'll delete all your information. It'll erase your Facebook page. It'll get rid of your Instagrams. No more TikToks, any of that. A tornado, an F5 will go in and annihilate it. Your work history, if you survive an F5, they might not know who you are because they can't look you up because it will have erased. That's how violent a tornado can be.
Fascinating.
Yes. Some of this actually happened.
Do you believe this, Bonnie? Do you believe this?
She was trying. I could see it.
Of course not.
Well, I mean, some of it's true. Like an F5 will, to a point, will erase you. You know,
everything in its path. Sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But to the point again, like I think definitely that I think there will always be relevance to disaster movies, disaster stories, because there's something very human in them. You know, there's something very human about the fear of nature. You know,
because you can't control it.
Exactly. And there's something that's always going to be very fascinating about that, regardless of whether it's a fictional story or it's, you know, something that actually happened, that they're, you know, bringing the story to life for the big screen so people can mm-hmm. you know, experience it, see it, whatever, because, you know, you watch a 5-minute newscast or, you know, read a magazine article or, you know, blurb online or something. It's not really gonna tell you or give you that kind of experience, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about knowing something happened to people or a situation could happen to people, and just having this mindset of, I don't know, just wanting to see how that plays out. Oh, well, how did they survive? Or how would I handle this? You know, there's something about that just kind of piques the human interest mind, I think.
What was that one film? It was, I think it was, I want to say Naomi Watts and Ewan McGregor, but I could be wrong.
I was just thinking about the one about the Thailand tsunami.
Yes, yes. That actually happened. And the way they depicted it was very raw and very powerful. And I enjoyed that film.
When you see that wave coming over the hotel and everybody's just
frozen. Yeah. Like, I think not everybody's experienced a tornado or a violent wind, so to speak. Not everybody has, technically. But everybody has experienced some type of turbulent water. Even if it was in your own bathtub and you slipped and you went underneath and the water overtook you, there's that emotion. There's that almost claustrophobic feeling of it going into your throat, your mouth, your lungs, and you trying desperately to grasp at that air in order to breathe, and you're coughing and the water's and it coming in as you're inhaling. There's that very powerful feeling that I think everybody related to with that film. And I think that it didn't necessarily, I don't think it broke the bank, but I think when you do, like when I mentioned it and you were like, yes, mm-hmm. you feel that film. And that is one that I think is a well done disaster film. And I feel like there's two ways to make a disaster film. There's you off the rails and you make it so ridiculous, Geostorm, that
San Andreas.
Yes.
The Rock.
Yes. Thank you. That people find it super entertaining. And then there's that other exact opposite where they make it so realistic that it becomes almost uncomfortable for people to watch. And that would be the one, the Naomi Watts one and the Ewan McGregor. And that it was very uncomfortable for people to watch. Necessary, I feel, but very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And one could say the same thing for the 9/11 films. I still think that they were done a little too soon. I think a 10-year marker might have been a good point.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
You know, doing it within 5 years, it's
the wound was super fresh. The wound's still fresh.
Yeah. And that wasn't just a disaster. That was an attack. You know what I mean?
Right.
That was something we now have protocols in place. I have to take my shoes off every time I go through the airport because of this horse shit, you know? Everybody hates
that. I cannot
that.
Believe that we're still taking our shoes off.
Oh, over 20 years later, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And simultaneously, then we started to get, what was it, that powder in the mail?
Oh, yeah. The
anthrax.
Anthrax.
And no one knew. And everybody thought that was related to the terrorist attacks. So mm-hmm. we thought, oh, my God, they've infiltrated us. And now they're sending anthrax to the mail. So there was this like double edge thing, like this double down on it that made everybody super paranoid and super crazy. And mosques were being attacked. Anybody of a religion of a Sikh religion or any relation to that Muslim, certain name.
Yeah.
Even now to this day, if you have a name, that sounds Middle Eastern, more than likely going to get pulled off to the side at the airport and questioned.
As a matter of fact, our friend Reza told me stories about that when he lived in Atlanta, you know, just not around that 9/11, even after that, for years, he would get, you know, pretty much harassed at the airport because of the name. They just asked about 1,000 questions.
Mm-hmm. And I get it to a point, but I also understand, you know, that we're a country based and founded on these types of freedoms and things. And it's a fine line that you have to walk on in order to make sure everybody's secure, but also make sure that the person that you're so-called interrogating feels safe as well. You know, not only we're doing this for your safety, but we're doing it for the safety of others. That's a hard one. That's a hard thing to get by on people. And I totally get that.
Well,
but when it,
not to get too much into it, but I mean, our country really has made racial profiling okay by a lot of people's standards.
I think most countries have, to be honest.
I'm
it's unfortunate.
It's the fear factor.
They have instilled a lot of fear in people that make it seem.
Well, they know that fear makes people complacent.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, and another big thing on that is religion, and we can get into that another time. But when it comes to these disaster films, they realize that this taps into that. This taps into the vein of people's realistic fears. And like this one that just came out, the Civil War, where there's a new America and there's sides and stuff. If nobody's seen, there was a television series that came out, and forgive me because I can never remember names and I'm horrible about it. Skeet Ulrich was in it, and it was on CBS. And it lasted 2 seasons, and then it got canceled. And it was about basically a nuclear bomb going off in the United States. And those people, there was people that like you're watching a small microcosm of these people trying to survive this nuclear attack and also recreate their societal norms while duly fending off other towns' opinions on Jericho. Society.
It's Jericho.
Yes, Jericho. Mm. Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic series, fantastic show. If you didn't get a chance to watch it, it also is available in comic book form, I believe, from IDW. They put that out many, many years ago. And getting copies of that, it was a low print run to begin with, so it is a little hard to find. But if you do find it, it's probably going to be in the dollar bin somewhere, to be honest. Or you can get it on eBay or something like that. All right, one of your fine shops, like Spiro's Heroes or We Can Be Heroes, both in Chatsworth, California. You can check those out if you get a chance. You're local or in the area.
Yes, indeed.
You can also do that. But yeah, so really briefly, what are your guys' closing thoughts on this? Do you want to continue to see these types of disaster films, or are you kind of done with them?
I enjoy them as much as, you know, they can be. The ones that are, you know, the fantastical heightened reality make absolutely no logical sense. You know, those are fun.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the alien invasions that take a few days to complete when in real life it would actually happen to be over in 20 minutes.
Like San Andreas, I freaking loved that. It was so ridiculous. And when The Rock is, you know, riding his tiny little speedboat right into a giant tsunami.
Yeah.
And he survives it. I mean, all the crazy crap he did in that movie, it was fun.
Fast and the Furious disaster film. That's what it was.
I enjoyed the heck out of that. And then as far as, you know, stuff that's based on you know, true life, real events.
Outbreak, contagion.
Oh, yeah. Those are good ones, too.
Yeah, those are, you know.
Those freak you out because they could really happen.
Well, yeah, those could. Yeah. But no, like the ones that are more. The disaster, you know, is a huge part of the story, but it's really, you know, something focused on like survival. You know, those true stories. I still enjoy those because that's, you know, the whole human interest piece to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for it on both ends of the spectrum.
Okay. Kevin, same way or something different?
Yep, same way. You know, it's just, you know, like I said, the ones that involve like the real hardcore stuff when it comes to, like viruses and even the zombies to a certain extent, like the 28 days later kind of freaks you out too, because even that, it turns out, is hypothetically possible.
Yeah.
So those are scary.
I mean, I find those almost informative in some ways because you get to see a microcosm of how humanity will behave and know that that's going to happen. You know, like when the pandemic hit in real life, I was super concerned because people started like taking all the food and all the supplies. Well, and I was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, shit, this is real. This is really happening. But then I also saw the good, you know, in the bubbles and people getting together and stuff. So it surprised me in a lot of ways, too. So I did find some hope in that.
Best and worst. You'll see humanity's best and worst.
Yeah, yeah. So with those types of more realistic, hyper-realistic films, I would prefer they, like, depending upon if they're based on an event, I would prefer they came out a little later from the event, a little farther away from the event to give the families and people time to grieve and to, you know, move on from that. But as far as like the ridiculous ones, yeah, bring them on. I'm all for it. But with that, yeah, I think that's going to call it for us. So let's just go ahead and wrap this up. I want to thank you all for listening. And thank you for our special guest, Bonnie, for being a part of this tonight or today or this afternoon, evening, morning. I don't know when it is. I'm in a dark room. So thank you, Bonnie. We appreciate it. Of course. Always a pleasure. And to my cohort in crime, Kevin, thank you again. And to you, the listener, we want to thank you very much. And if we don't see you out and about anytime soon, perhaps we'll see you
at a welcoming, prestigious, but never devastating comic book shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.